Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome. Welcome, everybody, to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 261 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. We got a great show planned for you this week, folks. David Chen will be joining us, producer and creator of the Tobolowsky Files. Also, let me get my little list here because there's a ton of stuff. He also hosts his own podcast. The Slash Film Cast, very popular. A Cast of Kings, all about the Game of Thrones series. And a bunch of other stuff. God, he just directed his first movie this year called The Primary Instinct, which world premiered at the Seattle International Film Festival. And all sorts of stuff. Now, he's also got an album that just came out. Of all cello songs, all looped cello, and it's all these great songs. We're going to be featuring that throughout the episode. But first, before we get into that, two very special people are joining me here in the backyard. One Nancy Guppy and one Ernie Shapiro, who have some fantastic stuff to talk about. How's it going, guys?
Very, very good. How are you?
Great.
Ernie seems a little bit uncomfortable all of a sudden. He was very.
Oh, you know what it is? You know, it's Shapiro, not Shapiro.
Oh, it's Shapiro.
It's Shapiro.
So you're not related to that, to the lawyer guy?
No. And no one's ever said that to me before.
You've never heard that before, have you?
No. Yeah,
never.
Except for this morning.
Wasn't there a Shapiro? He was on the O.J. Simpson case, right?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that where Shapiro was?
Dead. Alive or dead? I think he's dead.
Yes, right. I do think so, but I don't recall.
Yeah, so it's just Shapiro.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Great grandpa or something dropped the H at Ellis Island.
Yeah, when he came through Ellis and said, wait, let me do that H.
Where is everybody? Drop the H. And then they found everybody.
Now, Nancy, you were on the show, what, like 3 years ago?
Yes.
Did you come on the
I came
on,
like, yeah, 3 years ago? A different studio.
Yes.
The one in a different backyard.
The dining room.
The dining room.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was a blast. I think we just talked comedy and Almost Live and all that jive.
Yeah, and we've been kind of like internet friends ever since.
We have.
Yeah. And your husband was on the show too
for his
amazing book.
Yep, memoir.
Which is one of the only books I've read in the last like 5 years.
Really? So. Did you feel like you were forced to or you actually... Well, you kind of had to, right?
I kind of had to.
Right. And then you actually liked it?
And I totally liked it.
Yeah, it's
and
good.
And it changed my life.
How so?
Just the way I think about things.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell
cool.
Joe. Tell Joe.
I will pass that on.
Give me a call if he ever wants to hang out. You know?
Awesome.
Or write a book about a podcaster. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, okay. Well, yeah, we'll get it. We'll make something happen. His people will call your people. It'll happen.
Can we?
Yes.
Please?
Yes, we can. Yes.
Did
for
it
sure.
really change your life?
It did, man. Yeah. It was a great story about a lot of a lot of stuff that he talked about in there was stuff that I had gone through as well. Hmm. I suffered from schizophrenia for many years. And it was a lot of the stuff that he was talking about like really rang true. It wasn't, I didn't have such a, an intense, like
going into a hospital, that kind of whole thing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But it got close.
Yeah.
You know?
Right,
and so, and just reading about that stuff was very, very eye opening. And it helped me kind of come clean with a lot of the stuff in my past as well. So
that is so
way
great.
Way to go, Joe.
Way to go, Joe. And the one I want to say one thing is that my hairdresser, Kenny Page at Cooper Okai, he said it changed his life in that it changed how he saw people on the street.
Oh, sure.
Instead of like just buzzing by, he would just kind of take a moment and look at them more as a human. And he said that was a really a profound shift for him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I love the book. So,
yeah. Cool.
And it was a lot of fun having him on too. So Ernie, you are a photographer.
Okay. I'm a photographer.
Professional. That's what you do for your job.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. You had to think about that one for a second?
Well, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, yes, right. I am a professional photographer.
And a good one at that.
Very good one.
Which means people pay me to take pictures of stuff.
Photography.
Photography.
I think that's how you're supposed to say that.
Right.
Yes.
Photography.
Yeah. So what is it that you guys have coming up? You guys have this show that's coming up here in Seattle for people, for folks that live here in town or in the surrounding areas. What is it and when?
Well, it's called Musician, a Portrait Project, and it started about 2 years ago, and it is 172 large format photos of
very large,
30
right?
by 34, so
wow,
they're pretty large, basically local or Northwest-based musicians.
Mm-hmm.
One of our little taglines is, it's not rock star, it's musician. And so we have some big names, obviously, but we also have a lot who aren't of that, you know, kind of everyone knows them around the world. But the whole point is everyone in the show is a musician, and so that's the foundation of
it.
And I think we, by saying musician and not rock star, it levels the playing field.
Because
and I think that's important.
Because
I think rock star is something that maybe comes as a result of something, maybe you don't even have control over it.
Yeah,
you
know. Oh,
but,
yeah.
Right.
But I mean, so many of the great musicians in Seattle are maybe will never
make a living as a musician.
As a musician,
possibly.
Or get this world famous thing, you know, that's going on and be a multimillionaire, you know. So many of them are just, they're probably going to stay in the Northwest and they might have other jobs that they do.
Yeah.
But they're just as deserving.
Yeah, they're just, exactly. So yeah, so totally. A couple years ago, Ernie shot a picture of a Gary Minkler, who is a singer-songwriter, amazing artist of Red Dress and other bands, and that was the impetus for the whole thing. We shot this for a poster that we were doing to help Gary with his new record, and it was such a cool picture, and Ernie thought, man, this was great. Wouldn't it be fun to shoot a bunch more local musicians? And that was the start, and it's been a complete labor of love. We shot at Gibson Guitar Showroom. That's where Ernie did most of the photography down in Belltown. They let him basically camp out there with all his stuff, and people would come in. He'd set up days, and there'd be 6-7 artists come in.
So how long did this process take? From start to finish.
April 2013 is when it started.
Really?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she has that.
Whoa.
And the thing is, we
I have to keep looking up that date.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So when did we start this?
Yeah.
What date was it? Did we
How
shoot Gary?
Long has it been since we?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where we didn't know exactly where it was going to go or exactly where it was going to. We just kept doing it, knowing that what was the thing we said? We want to take a bunch of pictures. Remember?
Well, here's what we did. So we shot Gary.
Yeah.
In my garage.
Uh-huh. In Normandy Park.
And one of the pictures was, I said, hey, Gary, and we know Gary pretty well.
Yeah.
And he's an incredible guy, incredible artist. And we said, hey, Gary, for this one picture, can we pour water on your head? And so Nancy poured water on his bald head.
Yeah.
And it dripped down.
It's a beautiful shot.
I've seen this
It's
picture.
A great shot,
yeah,
right?
Man.
And
yeah.
that was, yeah, and it's That's probably great. One of the best pictures in the show.
We're not, but it's not the picture we're choosing
for him.
But it's
not the one we're,
oh, really?
Yeah.
No,
we're using.
No, just for a variety of reasons.
It was too good. Anyway, so we shot that, and we looked at the pictures, and I looked at her, and I said, you know, I got an idea. Why don't we take a picture of everyone? And she looked at me and was like, what is
okay, no, I said, okay.
You said, okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
And so then it just kind of blossomed from there. It was like, okay, well, what does that mean?
And by
exactly?
everyone, you meant like
every musician.
Much everybody.
Everyone, yeah. Which of course, you know, we now have 172 musicians in the show.
Yeah, but, and
that's so cool.
And so it was musicians, singers, songwriters, producers, engineers.
Yeah.
Photographers, journalists.
Photographers, journalists, club owners.
Uh-huh. Yep,
so people who have helped over the past 50 years shape Seattle
and the
music scene.
And one thing that Ernie had said early on, I was trying to get you to say this, which is we want to take a bunch of pictures, hang them on a wall, and walk around and look at them. That was our goal. That was the only goal. It wasn't like, oh, we want to make we're not making money. Believe me, it's not a money maker at all. But that was the goal, to focus on all these great artists and say, hey, look, and that would be the enjoyment. And that's essentially what this is going to be. So
Yeah. I love it. I love it how you've distilled it down to like basically what every gallery showing actually is. It's just we're going to take a bunch of pictures.
Yes.
And then we're going to walk around and
look at them. Yeah.
And that's the perfect way to put it because it's still great.
Yeah,
And we're going to invite everybody who we took pictures of, and they're going to walk around with us.
And you're going to give them water, which is...
We're going to give them water.
And donuts.
And Top Pot Donuts. Yes. Mark Klebeck is giving us some. And what was I saying? Oh, the space we're doing it at. This is super important, I think. Union Stables is this gorgeous... building 2200 Western Avenue, just north of the kind of the north end of Pike Place Market. It's an old historic building. There's a cool old horse head on the top, and it used to be an actual horse stable. So the main floor is still not leased. It's like 10,000 square feet, completely raw space.
Yeah.
And I got a friend of mine, Alex Landis, got me in contact with the guy who the property management, and they're allowing us to come in essentially for free.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's really astonishing. It's amazing. It's a huge space, and we need a huge space because we're hanging, not on the wall, we're hanging them on wires all through the space, and there's a lot of them. So,
Well, and a lot of that, you guys brought me this awesome poster with all of them on there. Yeah. And like, I was just like, when you guys brought that in, I was just like looking at it in the kitchen and just kind of pointing out, it's like, oh my God.
Well, you've had lots of those people on your show.
So many of these people now, and it's so cool to see. And Ernie, you took some amazing photos.
Thanks.
Just beautiful.
Thank you.
And just going through, you know, just the faces on that poster is pretty
And it's a very broad base and wide range of people.
All sorts of different people.
Not, you know, we have Pat O'Day, and we have some guys who were in the Sonics, the original Sonics, not the basketball team.
Yeah.
And we sure had Jack Sigma. Anyway. And
there's one basketball player on the show.
And then we have
stay on the mic.
New bands that are, coming up, the Haulers, and, you know, some of those
Ben Varelin, who built my
gorgeous amp
here.
Right.
You know, and he was one of the early guys that we shot.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, it's been
really... We got the Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Really cool.
I know, right in the middle of the poster, too. It's so funny.
Which was designed by Tim Gaber. He did a beautiful job on that poster. He really kind of laid it out beautifully.
Good job, Tim.
Yeah, there's been
good
so
job,
many
Timmy.
People.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So many people
there's
that are...
so many people to think.
Come forth and just... Because, again, this isn't a money-making thing for anybody.
Right.
And it's people who come forth and help people with helping with lighting in the event in the space, you know, because there's really basically no electricity that we just discovered.
Yeah, we're kind of
there's no electricity?
Really?
How is this possible? But anyways,
we figured it out.
We have all the stuff figured out, as we hit a road bump or, you know, speed bump and go, how do we deal with this?
And we do.
But it's really been, it's amazing.
So it's taken 2 years.
Yeah.
And when's the opening day?
The opening is the 27th of August, which is Thursday night.
Okay.
And
5 to 10 p.m.
One actually is like 4 to 8,
think.
But, you know, we'll post it up.
Gotcha.
And it will run for 2 weeks, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for 2 weeks.
Awesome. So if you're in the Seattle area, please come out to this show. And we're going to post a link to it.
Great.
To the Facebook invite page on our show blog. So go check that out at air-raid.net, and we'll post a link there. Date and where it is again?
Okay, so it's August 27th through September 13th.
Okay.
And it's at Union Stables, which is 2200 Western Avenue.
Awesome.
Right north of Pike Place Market.
Awesome. Yeah. And you can hear more from Nancy on Art Zone on the Seattle channel.
Way more than you'd ever want to hear ever, ever.
She's not kidding.
And also on old YouTube videos of Almost Live.
Yes, living on. Yeah, living on.
I get videos all the time. Nancy will go, hey, did you ever see this bit that we did on Almost Live?
Do I send you that many?
Oh, yeah. And then she sends me the link.
Lying.
Of herself?
No.
No,
that
it's not just of
just
herself. It's
no,
sad.
I know, that's sad.
It's
that hey. Hey, here's when I was really funny. Look at this one. How about this one, too?
And her husband, or, you know, whatever. Yeah, so she's always sending me links, and they're great. They're great episodes.
Always, quote, unquote.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a
pleasure. And you're coming to the party.
I'm coming to the party.
Okay, right
good.
On.
I'm definitely coming.
Yay.
Okay, we're going to go with our first musical break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking with David Chen, who's just put out this awesome album called Cello Put in Pop. It's all pop songs done on looping cello. It is absolutely beautiful. This is Where Is My Mind by the Pixies.
Ooh, I love that song.
Featuring Annie Yancer. We'll be back in a moment.
I love that song. With your feet on the end, your head on the ground. Try this trick and spin it, yeah. Your head will collapse. If there's nothing in it, then you'll ask yourself, where is my mind? Where is my mind?
Being a podcaster, you are very familiar with that. Yeah. David Chen joining me here in the backyard. We just heard Where Is My Mind featuring Annie, is it Jancer or Yancer?
Yancer.
It's Yancer, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I thought it was Jancer for the first, you know, several months that I knew her until, you know, because when you talk to people, it doesn't come up. How do you pronounce your last name very often?
Right.
You don't often, you know, I barely know what your last name is, probably.
I have friends that still pronounce it Rodden.
Yeah,
and it's actually Rodden.
I thought Rodden, you know.
Rodent without the T.
But Rodden was a is a distinct possibility for how you pronounce it.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It could be go either way.
It could go either way.
That's I'm sure back in the 1800s it probably was Rodden.
Seriously.
You know?
Sooner maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. This the song that we just played too that we just heard has an amazing video that goes with it too. But I couldn't find it.
It has not been published yet.
Oh, but so I saw like an advanced thing?
Yeah, I'm giving you the hookup, Aaron.
Oh.
Yeah. But it will be out very shortly.
Okay.
So within the next few days of... When is this coming out?
This is going to come out Monday.
Okay, yeah. So,
it'll be out.
Within 24 hours of this, you can go to DaveChenMusic.com and you can see this video.
There it is, man.
Yeah.
And it's a great video.
And it will blow you away.
It totally will blow you away. There's some camera trickery going on in there. Yeah, I love it, man. Yeah, great job. Cello Put in Pop is the name of the EP. David Chen is the name of the man. And you, consummate professional, turning off his
very
phone.
Very unprofessional.
Yeah, I know,
put a Do
right?
Not Disturb thing on there, man.
Yeah, that would be nice, right, if I could figure that out. I was picking Dave's brain a little bit before we started recording on just like the logistics of doing a podcast.
Yes.
Because I still, in 6 years, have not figured out how to run things correctly on my website.
Mm.
So, you know,
I aim to please.
Yeah, yeah. I'm keeping your contact info in my favorites file.
I noticed that you locked all the exits, so I don't think I'm leaving here anytime soon.
That's right. That's right. So you are a man of many talents, my friend. You are the creator and producer of the Tobolowsky Files, which was on, is it still on public radio?
No, it was on KUOW for several years. No,
oh, okay.
It's a podcast available at TobolowskyFiles.com.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then also you do the Slash Filmcast.
Correct.
Right. For slashfilm.com, and you also do the, what is it? Cast of Kings.
Game of Thrones recap
podcast. That's right.
Podcast.
And I saw that when you guys first started doing that one, and I saw a post of yours on Facebook, because we are very close internet friends. I saw a post of it, and I was like, oh, dude. And I checked it out, and it was like the top thing on fucking iTunes for like 2 months.
It was very popular. A lot of people like talking or hearing people talk about Game of Thrones, apparently.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, like, I listen to my friend Luke's podcast, TBTL, all the time. And when Game of Thrones is on, they're constantly talking about it as well. And they do it like this little end segment during the season, you know, so people who don't like it don't have to listen to it. It's right at the end of the show. But I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I have to go back because you seem like you're more of a pro when it comes to Game of Thrones.
Why do you say that?
Because you have a full podcast devoted to it.
Because I often spend more time talking about each episode than the episode runtime itself.
Right, right.
Right. So what is your question?
Okay, so is Jon Snow dead? What's your read on that? Because I heard that he showed up to taping the next season.
So let me say that any sort of professional characteristics that can be ascribed to me relating to Game of Thrones is only because of my amazing co-host, Jana Robinson, who works at Vanity Fair. The premise of the podcast
A podcast with somebody from Vanity Fair?
she didn't work at Vanity Fair when we first started, but now she's... you know, huge on the internet.
Yeah, so, she owns the magazine. No.
She bought it 3 years ago. It's amazing. So the premise of the podcast is she reads the books, mm-hmm. and I don't read the books. And
right.
And the podcast is for people who read or don't read. They can hear both perspectives, but we don't spoil anything from future episodes or seasons or anything.
Okay.
So really anyone can check out the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, if you go on iTunes and read reviews for Game of Thrones podcast, this is a huge pain point. A lot of people love the books, love the show, and they'll just like throw out random spoilers of stuff that happens in the future.
Right, right.
We studiously avoid that kind of stuff.
So you guys really do your homework a little bit.
Yeah, like she does like probably 6 hours of work per episode, and I just usually watch the episode and show up.
Right,
that's
right.
Kind of how it works. So
I love it.
So yeah. So is Jon Snow dead? Well,
What's your read on that?
I will say
because you haven't read the book.
I've been heavily influenced by Joanna, my co-host, on this matter.
Okay,
who is a Jon Snow truther?
Yeah,
that is to say that she wholeheartedly believes that Jon Snow is
going to be the king.
Is not? I don't know about that, but he's not dead.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And why is that? Well, you look at external factors. Firstly, are you going to put a spoiler warning in front of this?
No, not at all. It's been long enough.
All right.
Dave, it's been long enough. People should have watched it. If they were into Game of Thrones, they should have watched it already.
So,
don't you think?
Whatevs. So anyway, Jon Snow, you can look at external factors. Like, very telling. He gave an interview to Vulture right after the season was over.
Oh, really?
And he said, man, I can't wait to cut my hair now because I couldn't cut my hair while I was on the show because it was in the contract that I couldn't cut my hair or shave my beard.
Yeah.
Right? And so he's like, I can't wait to cut my hair. So immediately, my co-host Joanna went on what she called Jon Snow Hair Watch, which is observing his public appearances, seeing if his hair changes at all.
Yeah.
Hasn't cut his hair. Or at least he hasn't cut it that much that it's like way different from Jon Snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he showed up at Wimbledon and his hair and beard were suspiciously similar to what they are on the show. So, also, hey, Game of Thrones started shooting in Belfast this week.
Yeah, and he shows
and he
up.
He happened
for
to be there. Wow, yeah, very, very convenient.
I think he's coming back somehow. He's either going to be a White Walker or he's still just going to be like half alive or something.
Right, but it was just interesting that he had tried to, you know, throw people off the trail by saying he's not alive anymore.
Yeah.
And
that sounds like it was an intentional move.
Sounds like it's a red herring.
Yeah,
he's throwing us a red herring.
Right, yeah. Right. Exactly. Well, we're not here to talk about Game of Thrones, but I appreciate you indulging me.
Anytime.
A little bit, Dave. Yeah. We are here to talk about this album that you have. Like I said, it's called Cello Put in Pop. You can go to davidchenmusic.com.
DaveChenMusic.com. But now, because of you saying David Chen Music, I need to go buy davidchenmusic.com.
I think you do.
To make sure no one gets the wrong
place. It's going to be like $5.
Yes.
Come on.
How dare you? How dare you assume that David Chen Music is not worth millions?
You come on this show, and it's like, that show cost me money. Going on Air Raid cost me money.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you play cello, you loop it. and layer it on top of each other, you know, to create these these famous pop songs. And when you sent me the album, I got to tell you, in all honesty, I was a little bit iffy about having a classical player on the show because the music is so kind of subdued, and we try to, you know, pick things up, you know, and try to, you know, make, you know, have good energy and stuff.
Right.
But
I'm just killing your energy right now.
No, not at all, not at all. So what happened is that when you sent it to me, I downloaded it and put it on my phone, and I was driving home from work one day, and I was like, oh yeah, I gotta listen to this stuff, and so press play, and Where Is My Mind comes on with Annie, and I'm stuck in traffic, and it was like everything melted away around me, and I was just like, yeah. And it made me totally chill out. Like, I have some... It's a good thing, Annie, we never went out more than once, because you would have found out that I have an anger issue. So especially while stuck in traffic. But while I was listening to your album, I was just like, everything was mellow. It was very beautiful. And I was like, yeah, we're going to do this.
Awesome.
Yeah. So great job.
Thank you.
How long did it make? Or did it take to put this whole thing together?
Probably. So the way it happened was I played cello for like 10 years when I was a kid. Uh-huh. I started in like third grade. And
was it forced? Was this a forced
instrument?
It was forced.
I had a tiger mom. Yeah. And she forced us to play, you know, instruments, piano and cello. And it's fascinating because when you're a kid and your mom makes you play instruments, you kind of feel really put upon. You feel like,
oh, yeah.
Feel like, why is my mom forcing me to do this? You know,
that's how I felt I would about soccer.
I'd rather be doing anything else other right. than, you know, practicing is the worst because you often don't sound good when you practice. It's
right,
not
right.
fun to practice.
And when you're a kid, everything takes so long.
Correct.
Like it feels like 5 minutes feels like an hour.
Yeah.
So you know, when you're not getting a song.
Exactly. It's torturous. And then when you get older, you know, looking back on the time, I'm like, how the hell did my mom put up with trying to make me practice?
Right. right.
Like literally like driving me into we lived in the suburbs in Boston, and she uh-huh. drove me into Somerville and waited there, you know, sitting in her car for 2 hours while yeah. I had my cello lesson, and then my brother had his cello lesson.
And they were staggered, so they were...
No, they're right after the other, but it's just like, you know, that's like a 4 hour commitment of like driving us in there every single week for years, right? Yeah. And I think of myself as an adult, and I'm just like, I can't imagine doing that for anyone, you know?
Let alone myself.
Even my kids, you know, let alone myself, right? It's just like, it requires so much, you just admire how much dedication it takes on the part of the parent.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a kid, you don't see that because you don't think of things that way.
You must not have been as whiny as I was as a kid, because I got out of soccer mid-season.
Uh-huh.
Because I think I whined so much about it. So much about it that my dad was just like, fuck, okay,
right.
You're done. You don't have to.
And then so I got to college, and then I basically gave it up at that point. Because, you know, when you're in college, you're trying to find yourself. You're trying to figure out what I'm going to do.
Right.
And I knew what I was going to do was not music for a
Now, how old again were you when you started playing?
I was probably like 8 years
eight
old.
8 years old.
Yeah, so I played it for like 10
years. To college.
Yeah.
Up until college.
Played it for 10 years.
Okay.
And then...
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Amherst College in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And then you get to college and it's like you have all these new priorities and you want to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life and what you're going to major in and
sure.
all the things that you're... whatever you do in college. And I gave it up because I just didn't fit into my life. And I knew I was not going to do it for a living. So I wanted to focus my time on whatever it was I was going to do for a living and what, you know.
Yeah.
Of course.
And music wasn't a part of that.
It wasn't, you know, not really. I was in an a cappella group, but it wasn't really a huge part of my life. It was a huge part of my life in high school. And then you get to college and it kind of falls away. And did you see that movie Inside Out?
Yeah. No.
I haven't
seen it. I haven't seen that one.
Okay.
Yet.
There's
that's a new Pixar movie.
Anyway, there's a scene in Inside Out I'm going to try to stay away from spoilers here, but basically, like, Inside Out, it shows you the inside of her brain.
Right, right.
Her mind, and you kind of see, like, one of the areas is hockey, right? Like, she's really into hockey. Yeah. And
it's like Hockey Island or something
Hockey Island
like
or Hockey City or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And then what happens is she has a negative experience in hockey, and then all of a sudden, Hockey Island starts crumbling and falling into the ocean, into the, you know, the abyss or whatever, and
right.
almost gets lost or whatever. And I really liked how that movie depicted it, because you realize how kind of tenuous these interests you have are. Right?
Oh,
you can
sure.
just you can yeah. just stop doing it for 6 months, and then you might never do it again.
Right.
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 And,
yeah, you put it in a corner and it collects dust.
And so that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, I put the cello in a corner and it collected dust for over 10 years.
So up until leaving and going away to college. Was it still kind of a forced thing with your mom? Like, was she still
no,
like,
at that
you
point,
need to have some sort of activity that you're doing?
By the time I was in my like late high school, you know, yeah. junior and senior high school, she wasn't really yeah. forcing me to
now,
do
Now, was
it.
She musical too?
Yes.
Did she know how to play?
She actually, that was her trade. Like, she
oh, really?
Was a musician at the Yamaha School of Music in Taiwan when she came
no
here.
No kidding.
Yeah, she was a choir director at church, you know, so uh-huh. she was really very musical.
Wow,
you
know? Wow.
Yeah.
What about, was your dad?
Yeah, a little bit. He's not as talented as my mom in the music, but he also sang in the church choir, put it that
oh,
way.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it wasn't like he didn't know anything, but he wasn't. My mom is like kind of a, you know, a badass when it comes to music, you know? She could just sit down at a piano and just start like hammering stuff out, and then
sure.
she'll be like, oh, that was nothing. You know, like, she's one of those people
right,
that,
right,
like, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, the type of person that I'm super jealous.
Yeah,
of,
exactly.
About. Yeah.
Exactly. She could like you play something for her, and then she'll be able to like recreate it in a way that sounds amazing. On
exactly.
The piano, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway.
You're going to college.
Right. Going to college.
You leave the cello behind. What did you kind of decide to do with your life at that point? Were you the type of person that had your major figured out after the first
no,
year of college?
No. I drifted aimlessly for many years, and then got a job offer in Seattle a few years ago, and that's how I moved here.
We're about the same age. What was the job offer? Like what did you major in school? What did you end up going to school for?
I majored in legal philosophy, and I thought I would become a lawyer.
Legal philosophy?
Yeah.
What is that?
Okay, so the idea of liberal arts colleges is that they teach you how to think. And it doesn't
right.
matter how they teach you how to think, right? It doesn't matter.
Sure.
They can teach you sociology or mathematics or psychology, but they teach you how to think. And so my college had a very forward-thinking individual who founded this major. It was called Law, Jurisprudence, and Social Thought.
Okay.
And but I just shortened it to legal philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And he founded that major, and his theory was you can use legal texts to learn how to think.
Okay.
So that's what that was. And I thought I was going to become a lawyer. But I didn't.
But okay, so I mean, you know that like becoming a lawyer requires like other schooling, right?
Yeah,
like
law school.
you can't just take like
thank you.
I have
for
a legal philosophy degree.
Yes.
Gonna take this over and
no.
see if I can get my lawyer certificate.
I'm aware. It's like okay.
I know you.
Thank
are.
You for explaining. That
I know
to
you.
Me.
Are.
It's like people who you know. It's like people who major in business before they go to business school.
Sure. Yeah.
You know
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
That kind
yeah.
of thing.
No. I got. Yeah. I was.
But
just
I'm like one of those
stupid.
People that majored in business and didn't go to business school. So it's like, what was the point of that?
Right.
No.
Right.
I am very grateful for the major I had.
Yeah.
But you know, you realize like how little. What you major in has to do with what you end up doing in life.
I would say that a majority of people I know don't use their major
right.
in college, but it's a very valuable learning experience,
for sure.
right? You learn how to kind of make your way in the world.
Yeah.
In a college setting.
I have a master's degree as well that is
oh,
also
do?
Completely unrelated to what I'm doing now.
So did you go for your master's right after
no,
the four
I spent
year?
A few years working.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then got my master's and then got a job offer here and then came here.
And what's your master's in?
Education. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, this is in answer to your question of like how long did this take to make. So I'm a very competitive person.
Uh-huh.
And I generally believe when you attempt to do something, you should try to either be first, different, or best. And essentially, like, there's, in my, like, this is not a hard and fast rule. Like, I don't adhere to this with everything in my life.
Sure.
But in general, if I don't feel like I can do it first, different, or best, I will probably not attempt it. There was a question in psychology class in college at Amherst, which I almost majored in, by the way, that they were trying to distinguish between what is the difference between a type A and a type B person.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And they started shooting out characteristics of type A personality. Like, when you are at a red light, do you get frustrated? Right. Because waiting for the red light to change to green. When you play like tennis or sports with people, do you enjoy just playing the sport, or do you derive satisfaction out of beating them? Like, is that how you get your enjoyment out of it? And so on and so forth. And I realized, like, all of those things describe me exactly.
Yeah.
And
you're a competitive person.
I try. Yeah. And so I feel like when I attempt something, I want to be like first, different, or best. Good. And again, like, I'm not saying I achieve that, but that's kind of like my mantra when I try something. And so one of the reasons I had to kind of stop playing cello is because I knew there are people who would always be better than me. Right.
Right.
And of course that's true of anything. But like for cello, it was like the gulf between me and the best people seemed so massive. There's people that I knew that Clara Yang, I remember her from when I was in high school, practiced like 6 to 8 hours of cello a day.
Right.
Like, that's all I don't even know if she did any school. Like, she's one of those like prodigies that all they did was practice cello.
Right. 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 Oh yeah.
And,
I knew those kids.
Yeah. And I was like, there's no way I will ever be as good as that person. Uh-huh. And so a part of me was like, oh, well, therefore there's no point. Now I know that sounds horrible and you should just take enjoyment.
Now, was that partly because like you didn't want to put that amount of effort into it?
Well, it's because I knew like the only way I would put that amount of effort is if I wanted to become a musician full time.
Right, right.
And I knew I kind of didn't want that. And also my mom, who forced me to play cello when I was young, she didn't really want that either. So kind of a mixed message, you know, when you take your kid to it's
she wanted you to be a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You know, she takes you to music class all the time, but it's like, oh, but don't actually become, do this for a
living. I don't want you to like it too much.
Exactly. Right. Okay? Just enough to work at it for like hundreds of hours over the course of your formative years.
Right.
So I kind of knew I would never be as good as those people.
Uh-huh.
I had this epiphany a few, like a year and a half ago, which is that like, hey, can I do this in a way that no other people or very few other people are doing it?
Mm-hmm.
So I actually did research. I went out there and I was like, who is doing cello looping? Like, how many people are actually doing cello looping? How many people are putting on the internet? And if you look at the people who are playing cello in the world, who are good at it, there's tens, if not hundreds of thousands of them.
Right? Oh, sure.
Thousands upon thousands, okay?
It's a
rather popular instrument. It's not as popular as like violin, but it's, you know, still it's not as not popular as tuba, but it's not as popular as violin, you know? So then it's like right in the middle. It's right in the sweet spot.
We just lost our tuba contingent.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah. So thousands of people. Then how many of those people do looping cello? Not that many. Uh-huh. Maybe in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Maybe in the thousands. But like I would say a small fraction.
Yeah.
Now of those people, how many of them, you know, put together an EP or know how to shoot and edit video and put that online of their cello stuff?
Yeah.
How many of those are there? Literally less than a dozen.
You really worked this out, man.
I tried.
Dang.
There's some who are really amazing at it. People like Zoe Keating or Rachel Lander. These are like my idols.
I think I've seen the Zoe Keating. Like, she's got videos up too.
Yeah,
right?
She's like the gold standard, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, there's people like that. But there are very few of us who are doing looping cello.
Yeah.
And putting it out in videos. And so I was like...
Well, and playing like pop music.
And playing
too,
pop music.
Right?
And I was like, this is a niche that I feel like I could occupy and make a meaningful contribution to.
Yeah.
So that's how I kind
So when did that start? Like, when,
was
that just a couple years ago?
Yeah, it was almost a year ago. Probably like 14,
oh, a year
14
ago.
Months
okay.
ago. Right?
Yeah, so, you did just say that.
After a decade of not playing, So this is hilarious. When I moved to Seattle, the company I work for, they paid for all the relocation costs.
Right.
And so they came to my parents' house, which is where I stored all my stuff, and they said, what do you want to take with you? And my parents were like, do you want to take the cello with you? Right. And I was like, no, there's no way I'm ever going to play that again. Right. Yeah. And so if I had, but if I had just pointed at the cello and said yes,
yeah,
it would have saved a whole lot of problems, because basically it is really difficult to ship a cello across the United States, right? Because you not only want to ship the cello, you got to put it in a box, and those things are massive. So I had really great friends in Boston, Matt and Nell, they're a couple, and they packed the cello up and in a gigantic box. And it's like, I don't even know
like
how they got
like one of the wood boxes and
not
stuff?
A wood, like cardboard, okay. And they wrapped it, and it's like, I don't even know how they got that in a vehicle. Like, you can't fit that in a normal car.
Yeah.
Anyway, they got it to FedEx or whatever the hell, and they shipped it. Guess what the total cost was?
$600.
Yeah, that's about right. It was about $650.
Yeah.
So I would have saved $650 with a lot of time if I had just anticipated that I might be playing cello again.
Oh, man. That's crazy. So, that I mean, this all came together a year ago, and I think I actually... because we first met about a year ago,
right?
Because it was at the Quiet Ones show, right?
Correct.
Was that the first time we met?
Yeah, that's the first time we met. We met at the Crocodile.
Yeah, I was emceeing that, and you and Stephen Tobolowsky actually came to the show,
right?
Along with Megan Griffiths.
That's right.
Which was the first time I met her as well. I think you posted something online about how you were going to start playing the cello again.
I remember
that. That's ringing a bell.
Yeah, that's right. So I started a year ago and then started practicing again and bought a looping pedal and, and just got into it. And then the EP itself, this is like a freaking 30-minute long way of answering your original question. The EP itself, I think I started recording for it in May. So
okay.
And today is July 30th as we're recording.
Yeah.
So it all came together in about 3 months.
How did you actually, you know what? Let's do this. Let's go to our second musical break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about how this EP actually came together. Because I've got some really, really great questions.
I believe you.
Okay. This song is called Time. This is by this is originally by Hans Zimmer.
Right.
From the Inception soundtrack. Very, very good version of Time. Off of the EP, Cello Put in Pop by Dave Chen. You can find it at davechenmusic.com. See, you got it right.
There you go.
Yeah. Done, son. Professional. All right. This is Time. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. I'm going to follow you on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle, by the way?
At Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y.
Dave Chensky.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're trying to make yourself like...
Polish?
A Russian, like, you know, it's famous cello player.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like Rostropovich here. This is from when I was at a job after college, and I'd come into work, and some guy would always say, Chensky. He would always see me and say, Chensky.
You had a Rob Schneider in your office?
Exactly right.
Oh, my God. Ugh. I work with so many people like that. I really do. Like, in my day job. Like,
he was a cool guy. There's nothing wrong with being a Rob Schneider.
No. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I get sick of is just all the cliched sayings that happen in an office setting.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody really wants to have, like, a sit-down conversation while they're passing you, passing your cubicle.
Uh-huh.
Right? So it's like, hey, man, hot weather out there, right? So yeah. Hot. You could cook an egg on the sidewalk. You know, just like those, all those
I
sayings
almost fell asleep just now.
That you hear every single day, you know, over and over and over again. Oh, God. Drives me crazy. Drives me crazy. But I find myself using them constantly.
I see.
So, yeah. Boring conversations 101.
Right.
Dave. Yeah.
Right.
So before we left for that last musical break, we were talking with you about how this EP actually came together. And I had a question because you're actually selling this EP.
Yes.
There had to be something that went on with getting rights to resell this music, right?
That is correct. Well, firstly, yes, there is.
Yeah.
And I took care of it, but a good thing, too.
Is that a hell of a process? That's got to be a hell of a process.
It's actually not that bad.
Really?
Yeah, the process of acquiring rights to, like... there are some copyright laws that exist that are really useful for DIY people.
Right, right.
One of them is, like, for instance, I remember when video stores used to be a thing, you know, there was a law or a court case that decided that, hey, you can, once you buy a videotape, you can rent it as many times. You can do whatever you want with it, including renting
right.
it. And that, so that was how video stores existed.
Uh-huh.
Similarly, once a song is out there, you have the ability to cover it and sell copies of it so long as you purchase a license for it.
Okay, yeah.
So there's services that do this, easysonglicensing.com, louder.com,
mm-hmm.
That allow you to buy what's called a mechanical license, which allows you to cover a song and sell it. Now, that does mean that you are paying the original songwriter
a small percentage of every
single copy you sell.
Yeah, right. Okay. And that's where their residuals come from. That's where, like, residual checks come from. It's almost kind of the same thing as, like, you know, a television show that goes into syndication or something like that, and they're getting these residual checks from
I don't know if that's where, like, the primary
No. That's not primary source of income, but that's where people are getting these checks.
Yeah, they will get some, you know,
sure.
The killers will get, you know, $5 from all the massive success of my EP.
Hey, it's really good, man. I'm super impressed with it.
I appreciate that.
I think it's great. And I think looping the whole, you know, looping the cello on itself, I'm always a big fan of that, like layering. I used to do it vocally.
Oh, nice.
And just basically just try to sing it, you know, the same that you did. And that's how you get that effect, like the Elliott Smith effect, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And,
on top of yourself. Yeah.
And I used to love that sound. On records that I would
Eminem does that a lot as well.
Really?
Yeah. He, like, you know, raps on top of himself.
No shit.
Yeah.
God, that seems like it would be so hard.
When you hear him rap, like, without that, it actually sounds weird because you're so used to hearing it as though it's, like, several of him at the same time.
Oh, that's strange. Okay, yeah, and now that I think about it, yeah, it does have kind of a very stereo effect kind of sound to it.
Yeah.
Sound to his voice, huh?
So,
that's interesting.
So, yeah, that is, you know, something I learned, like, I think it's magic. I think looping is magical. The idea that one individual or very few individuals can create a sound and, like, it's like building a house, like, in real time.
Yeah, you know, you're building a foundation.
You're building this foundation, and then you put stuff on top of it, and it becomes something beautiful. And I think looping is amazing. But the thing is, I started making videos of my looping, and with today's attention-deprived culture... you really need to grab people as soon as possible when you're making a video.
Right.
And the thing is, looping takes a long time to, you know, to build. And so I learned a lot of things basically making videos. Number one, you really need to grab people as soon as possible. Number two, loops take a long time to build. Number three, most people didn't even understand what I was doing. Like they on a basic level don't understand that, like, oh, hey, I'm creating these loops. And so my whole philosophy of showing the entire looping process has just like completely gone away. Like I just don't. All the stuff on Dave10music.com, it is in fact done with loops, but I no longer feel necessary to show the every single loop building up you know, the final conclusion.
Some people take care of that by doing just separate little like boxes showing what they're doing. Like the there's that one balloon video where the guy creates kind of a song out of just playing on a blown up balloon.
Right.
You know, on the rubber. And
they'll do like picture in picture,
picture
like,
and picture and picture and picture and picture of each one of the sounds.
I don't have the patience for that. So
that seems like it would be a lot of work. Exactly.
But yeah, it's definitely interesting to try and convey what it is that looping is and what's happening. And so I've played live a couple of times and, I'll just say like all the sounds that you're going to hear are created, you know, in real time right now.
Yeah.
And so that usually helps kind of set it up.
Was that a nerve-wracking experience for you, playing live? I mean, you're only coming back into this, like, in a year.
I've only played live twice in the last year. So very...
What kind of shows were they?
I did an open mic, and then I did one at, like, kind of a social event.
Okay.
And the social event with Annie, actually.
Oh, okay.
It went really well. But I think about like 6 to 8 months ago, or probably like a year ago, actually, I went to Connor Byrne.
Okay. Down in Ballard.
Down in Ballard.
Here in Seattle.
And, it was disastrous. I got up there, I'm like pouring like buckets of sweat.
From nerves or?
From the nerves. Yeah. Literally, there's like 15 people there. It's not even like it's a huge crowd. Yeah. So there's 15 people there. I'm poor because I never performed publicly in, you know, over 10 years. And also, looping requires like specific equipment. And so I brought my own looping pedal, but I was plugged into their system and it wasn't reading correctly. There's like feedback. It didn't sound like how I feel it's supposed to sound.
Right.
So I kept getting distracted by that and I kept like not initiating the loop correctly. Like basically one of the perils of doing looping is if you do not nail that first loop, you are it's
and you're
horrible.
Basically you're stepping on a pedal.
Yes,
and,
you're stepping
and you
on
need
pedal.
To step on the pedal just at the right second to get these things to sync up to each other.
Correct.
So yeah, that's always been a super difficult thing. And I never got the hang of it.
And if you are a split second off, it sounds like...
It sounds wrong.
It sounds like you're
driving... And
it'll
lose itself as the further it goes on because it's not on beat.
It will sound like you're driving a car that has a flat tire, basically.
Yeah.
I mean it
won't That's a really good analogy.
It won't actually sound like that, but it'll just sound like you're not quite... You're almost... Like one flat tire. It's like, oh, this is almost functional, but it's not quite. There's crucial element that's missing.
So you were super nervous for that first show just for the open mic.
It went horribly and it really scared me off of performing live.
Now had you done live stuff before for any of the shows that you've done? You had to have like gotten up and done like a live
like
Tobolowsky.
A podcast?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we've done that stuff live. But it's not the same as doing an instrument, you know?
Well no. Yeah. And this is one thing that I love talking to people about because I feel like and one of the things that I love talking to some of the comedians that have come on this show is that it seems like the times that I've emceed events, I've had to really get used to being up on stage without a guitar in front of me.
It's the opposite for me.
Yeah. I mean, right. Because that thing is a shield.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shield in front of you that's kind of guarding you from the audience. But like when you're a comedian or you're just emceeing something, you know, you're getting up there, there's nothing in front of you. And it's the most uncomfortable thing for me that I've had to really get used to.
Right.
So that it's the complete opposite for you. Why?
Because I think doing the podcast, we used to do the podcast live, for instance.
Uh-huh.
And like my Slash Film podcast, we used to do that live. And I remember, you know, when you do a show live, physiologically, I change, like, in the sense that, no, not like I morph into something, but just like, I'll start, like, my heart gets faster.
Oh, sure.
I'll start sweating, yeah. You know, I'll start, like, getting really nervous. And so for a while, like, whenever I broadcast live, I just start, like, you know, I'd be very physically uncomfortable. Yeah. And then over time, you just got used to it. Like, over time, you get used to it. And then now I'm kind of used to talking and knowing that will be heard by, you know, thousands of people. And then you get used to it. And
So throwing the instrument in there.
But throwing the
really
instrument.
Really just put it, like, it was like putting a branch in a spoke.
Yeah, it just is, because the amount of dexterity and,
right.
you know, precision required is just, like, completely ruined me. So, and then, of course, it's like, I also try to focus, you know, my activities for the biggest ROI, which I'm sure is a term you hear used a lot with musicians. But, like, when I record a video, you know, that can be seen 100,000 times.
Yeah.
And when I play a show, it will be seen by, like, 40 people, right? And so what should I spend more of my time? And also, I can control the circumstances under which I make a video, too, mm-hmm. right? And so so that really scared me off from, like, doing more live shows. But, you know,
I think you should, though, man. Yeah. I think doing stuff live, and this is what we were talking about a little bit beforehand, because I was just interviewed and kind of talking about the same thing. I think when you're doing stuff creatively, you have to make yourself known in a physical sense.
Right.
Almost, you know, even if you're, you know, even if you're just doing it in Seattle or something
Yeah.
Or whatever town you're in, you have to make yourself known to the group that you're trying to, you know, either do a show on or do a show for or do a show with, you know?
Yeah.
And whatever that show may be.
I'm definitely open to it and exploring possibilities now. So it's, and I think
I'm just saying, don't hang up your hat on that.
Oh, I'm not. When I did that Connor Byrne open mic, I've just been doing this for 3 months. And so now I've been doing it for a year, which is, again, I say this, I feel so silly because you've had guests on this program that have been doing music for, you know, decades continuously.
Right,
so
right.
when I talk about like 3 months, it's like nothing. But, you know, I have not been doing it for longer and I feel more comfortable. And it's definitely a possibility to do more stuff live.
Yeah, man. I think you got to.
Yeah.
You got to.
Yeah.
Because these songs are solid, dude. Like, these are classic songs. And you get, you know, maybe, you know, five more of them under your belt.
Yeah.
And you got a show.
Yeah, I mean, I think I already have five more. It's just like,
oh, there
you
go.
Like, the EP doesn't necessarily reflect all the things that I know, as of most people.
Now, why did you choose an EP over a full length?
Just because I think the last year of my life, the last 2 years of my life, has all been about me thinking the following phrase, you know. Oh, I bet it wouldn't be that difficult to do blank. And so I bet it wouldn't be that difficult to make a movie. You know, like, I've seen people make movies. I talk about movies all the time. I bet I could make a movie.
Right.
And I did make a movie.
Yeah. The Primary Instinct.
Primary Instinct.
Right?
It definitely took a good 5 to 10 years off my life. I mean, just incredible. Like, let's put it this way. When I did it, I now understand why more people don't do it. It's because it is so challenging. And same with the EP. I thought, hey, it probably wouldn't be that hard to record a few songs and get them out there and so
right,
on.
Right.
And then I did it, and I'm like, wow, that really took a lot out of me. I mean, you know, the whole thing is 16 minutes long. It's not super long. It only took me a few months to make, but it really felt like it took a lot out of me. And I think probably the single biggest thing that takes the most, you know, effort and time for me, at least, beyond the recording and practicing and all that stuff, is the rounds of review for the audio, basically.
Sure, yeah.
Rounds of review in general, like, consume so much time and energy. But essentially, you know, the sound engineer will send me a version of the song. And
right,
it's like,
right.
Okay, how do you feel about this? And now I need to listen to it, like, five times, and then be like, okay, I like at 1 minute this
take
happens.
Take it down to the car, listen to it on the car stereo.
Yeah, listen to the car stereo, And that's just like, and then by the end, you've heard the same song like 100 times, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's just, it's exhausting, and And it feels like you spend a lot of time to advance very little, you know?
Right.
You'll listen to it a dozen times, and then you'll make all these suggestions, and then it sounds slightly different than the one you just heard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
each
incremental step is you know, takes a lot of time. So,
sure.
So that's why EP. I mean, just try to do a few and then see how that feels.
Yeah. Well, it turned out great, man. I think it's something that you should be super proud of. And I hope people listening to this program go and check it out and like the rest of it.
Yeah,
as well.
I hope so too.
I think people really will dig this.
I appreciate that. You know? Yeah. DaveChenMusic.com is where you can find
there
all
you
that
go.
Stuff.
Yeah. There you go. Or David. Whatever.
You're killing me, Rodden. You're killing me.
So let's talk about this movie really quick too, because you've got this. You just hit on it really quickly, and we're running low on time here. But I did want to talk about this for a second. How did that all come together? Was it the same kind of process where you were just like, I think I can do this, and I've got an idea, and I'm just gonna go for it.
I think the movie came out the movie came out of a place of, I'm doing this podcast with Stephen Tobolowsky, who,
right,
in my opinion, is one of the finest character actors of our generation.
Yes.
You know, he's been in so many things, and he's so talented. And I was at a
and
period...
And a great storyteller.
Great storyteller.
Great storyteller.
And I was at a period of my life where I had not that much time and resources, but enough that I could make something with him.
Right.
And I knew that if I like 10 years or 20 years from now, if I look back at this time in my life and I didn't make a movie with him, I would regret it.
Yeah.
Right. And so it was really completely driven out of avoiding regret for future Dave.
Yeah.
Was like, I didn't want to regret not making a movie.
Right.
Which is like not generally a great way to start a movie, but...
No, but I like that. I like that you said that, because I have thoughts like that all the time. And that's been one of the driving forces behind some of the biggest guests that we've had on this show.
Interesting.
And some of them, you know, have come to us, and it makes me even like, I mean, just thinking about talking to, you know, Duff McKagan is like... makes my anxiety build, you know, or Mike McCready or something like that. Like it's not something I would have sought out, but when the opportunity arose, I was like, you need to do that or you're going to regret it for the rest of your life.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and like, and so even though I had to take a pill to go and talk to these guys,
wow. Did you really?
Like
literally?
A beta blocker.
Are you serious?
Know? So I wouldn't be like you at the Connor Byrne and sweating bullets and be like, so you remember when you founded Guns N' Roses? That was pretty, like, you know, pull a Chris Farley, you know. But yeah, I like that you said that because you know, I think everybody has that kind of thing, you know, that happens, and not a lot of people take charge and really go for it. And then they do regret it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, yeah. So did that, and actually both that movie and the EP were funded on Kickstarter primarily.
Yeah, 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 right.
But the question of how did that come together is basically, it took a long time, you know?
Yeah.
How it went down was these guys at this company called Super Frog Saves Tokyo, which is a video production company, or was at least, they're now rebranded to Cut.com.
Okay.
They made a really cool slow motion wedding video, right? Wedding booth, you know, how some weddings have video photo booths.
Right.
So they made a slow motion video booth at a wedding, right?
That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's like ultra slow motion. Like, so they film it in ultra slow motion, and it's all these people at a wedding doing fun things. And I have actually done some wedding photography in my time, and so I wanted to know more about how that was made. So I literally just cold emailed the guy who was responsible for that video, and coincidentally, he happened to live in Seattle, right? So I cold emailed him and I said, hey, tell me how you made this wedding video. I'm going to be presumptuous that you're going to give me your time. Now, fortunately, I had, because the Tobolowsky Files aired in Seattle, like some people so he actually knew me from the Tobolowsky Files, and so, and so that was cool. And so he told me, and then we got on the phone. We started talking about like all the things that we wanted to do. Like, I consider myself a close friend with him now. His name is Mike, and we started talking about like all the things we wanted to do with our lives, and he wanted to make a movie before he was 35, and I've always wanted to make a movie, and so conversation just kept going for literally months and months and months, and finally I was like, you know what, we're doing this. I'm going to launch a Kickstarter. Let's just launch a Kickstarter. Let's leave it to the gods and like launch a Kickstarter. And if the Kickstarter is successful, then we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And if not, then we're not going to do it.
How much did you guys raise on the Kickstarter?
We raised $50,000.
$50,000.
Yes.
To make the movie. Did you go over budget?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm now paying for every single expense out of
pocket. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And that's something else you learn is like, I would say, you know, the biggest lesson from that is from making a movie is how freaking expensive everything is. It's just everything is so expensive,
right.
and
down to like permits.
Permits. Well,
for
we didn't
filming.
We didn't need to
places.
Do that because we filmed at the Moore Theater, that was awesome.
Okay,
but
now it's called The Primary Instinct.
Yes,
right. We should say and what's it about?
It's,
give us a brief.
It's a concert.
Synopsis.
It's basically a concert film where Steven tells a story on stage. That's think of it like a stand-up special, comedy stand-up special, but instead of jokes. It's like one whole long story. If you've seen any work by like Spalding Gray, I would compare it to that.
Okay.
I don't compare myself to, you know, the directors of Spalding Gray films like Jonathan Demme and Steven Soderbergh. I don't compare myself to that, but I'm saying, you know, the ethos of the story, you know, storytelling is the same. So, and it just, he talks about why we tell stories in the first place. And that's primarily it. It's just a concert film. It wasn't always going to be a concert film. It was originally going to be more of a documentary. But after, you know, a lot of soul searching and a lot of experimenting with different formats, we decided concert film would be the best one.
Yeah, yeah. Are people going to be able to see that soon?
They will be able to.
I know that it premiered at the Seattle International Film Festival, right?
It did. And it will be out on video on demand shortly.
And cool.
Hopefully... You can find more info about it at theprimaryinstinct.com. Right now, that just leads to the Kickstarter. It will eventually, soon, lead to the website that we'll build for it. So,
there you go. Yeah. There you go.
So, but yeah, everything is super expensive, man. I mean, like, really, I should have not tried to attempt something like this with
everything
less...
in life is Correct. Expensive now.
But I would say, like, I shouldn't have attempted this with less than, like, $100,000. Like, that's really what you need to be comfortably able to make, even a very... modestly ambitious, like a modest ambition film like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's people who are able to do it for cheaper. But, you know, everyone works for free or a lot of people work for free. You know, you can make a movie for 10 grand if you want.
Right.
But it's just a lot of people have to work for free or do it under their rate. And so,
exactly.
And we ended up paying a lot of people like what they would normally make. So,
First mistake.
Yeah, that was my first error. My first error was agreeing to do the film at all.
Right.
The second one was paying
was
people.
Was paying
fairly.
People.
Yeah. That was catastrophic.
Yeah. So do you think you'll do it again?
I don't know. I'm at a weird weird place in my life right now, to be honest with you.
Why? What do you mean weird place in your life?
Oh, well, just because this EP is now out.
Uh-huh.
And then the movie's going to be out in the next month or two.
Yeah.
And... but I have a full-time job, man.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
like you. Yeah. Right? What is your full-time job? Is
I'm a geologist.
You're a geologist.
Yeah.
What do you,
yeah.
who do you work for?
I can't, I can't say.
Oh, you can't say. Yeah. Okay. Well, then I can't say either what I do. So I do software of a micro variety and we'll just leave it at that.
Is that why you had to come over at 7 p.m. today?
What do you mean? Because I work
because
full-time job, or?
Yeah no because you you work over in a different city.
I work over in a different city. That's
yeah, yeah.
Well, no, I
yeah.
I just I came over at 7 o'clock today because I wanted to avoid the traffic on 99, which
right,
is
right.
horrendous.
Yeah,
I live in Belltown. So
okay.
So I'm at a weird place in my life because I've put so much work into these things and
right.
None of these things. It's very likely that neither of these things are going to be wildly successful. And when I say wildly successful, I mean neither of them is probably going to sell more than, let's say, 20,000 copies.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And so then when you produce work that takes so much out of you and that you do in your spare time, you know, and it's not going to be wildly... I don't care about the money. It's just like, it's not even going to be seen or heard by that many people.
Yeah.
Then it's like, well, what do you do? What do you do next? And I'll probably do more work along the lines of making movies and making songs because I feel like I have to. Do you know what I mean? Like, just because...
I get it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally get it. But is that worth it, though? like if that's the way you feel about it, is it worth it to actually...
Because you have people on the show who are like, oh, I love music so much, and that's all I want to do for the rest of my life, right?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right. And that's what makes them happy.
And I'm like the most cynical person ever. Like, I do things too, I don't regret them.
You are far, far from the most cynical person I've ever had on this show.
I think, I do creative acts to feel vital. Put it that way.
Okay.
You know, to feel like I'm alive.
I get that too.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. When I say I have to, it's like I do it to feel alive.
Okay.
And I don't know that it makes me happy so much as not doing it would make me unhappy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm at. And it's like it would be nice to be able to make a living off these things, but I feel like I'm very far away from that right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm at this place where like I produce stuff that like the EP and the movie I'm proud of, but it's like, it's definitely not going to pay the bills, right? So it's like, do I keep, and it just is so time consuming and expensive. And it's like, but then at the end of the day, it's like, well, what am I going to do with my time?
Well, you know, it's just like, and this is where the conversation comes full circle, is probably just going to be just like the cello for you.
How so?
Where you set it down and you come back to it later.
Maybe.
And you have another journey, another amazing journey. Creating something new. Something
maybe, totally although new. I suspect that the next one will not take a decade. That's my guess.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
David Chen, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This has been a real pleasure talking with you.
It's been an honor to be in the same seats as many of the famous musicians of our day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you very much, man. That's a very sweet thing to say. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, cello, put in pop, right?
Yes.
At DaveChenMusic.com. Go get it. It's on iTunes. It's on Amazon, Google Play, and Xbox Live.
Yes.
As well, right? And let's...
Xbox Music.
Oh, Xbox Music. Yeah. Sorry. And let's plug your other wares here. Where can we find out more about you? Tobolowski Files, / film, all that stuff.
A lot of places. I would say just go to DaveChen.net.
Okay.
You'll find links for all of my
stuff. And that's where everything kind of spans out from.
You should find links on the sidebar there of all of my various things.
There you go.
DaveChen.net.
Awesome.
C-H-E-N.
Dave, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. That was great, right? Man. David is a fantastic human being. Like we said in the episode, he has got his fingers in a lot of things. Please go to DaveChenMusic.com and find out more about this awesome EP and get your hands on it, will ya? All right. And we'll have a link for it up on our website at www.air-raid.net. And you can find it there right in the show blog. Let's see, what's coming up for next week? Next week, we're going to finally air the, Air Raid Live, number 2. It's going to be coming at you next week. and it's a fantastic, fantastic romp. And I know you guys are just going to enjoy it with the likes of Pickwick, Mikey and Maddie. Some great live music from both of those bands. Some great live stand-up from Alicia Sanchez. It was an awesome night. Sold out crowd, man, right there at Naked City Brewery here in North Seattle. Let's see, what else? What else do we have to get to? Oh man. Oh, we got some stories coming up, man, for you guys. Some really, really great stories. Yeah, but we'll save that. Maybe we'll mention that next week, all right? Okay. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We've had a great time this week chatting with you, or chatting at you, whatever you want to call it. You can subscribe to the Air Raid Podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. It only takes a couple seconds just to give us a nice little star rating there, preferably 5 stars, folks. We're also available on Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps, and now on the Spreaker app. That's Spreaker.com. You can get that on the Android store or on iTunes. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast. See photos, video, and just keep up generally with what's going on with the podcast. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet. You can follow us there or email me directly if you want to get in touch at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, people. Take the pledge to bring this show up in conversation. The next conversation you have about music or comedy or anything of that nature. How about entertainment? How about books? How about you're sitting down with a friend, you're talking about Nancy Guppy, right? From Almost Live. Bring it up. Bring it up that she was on the show. Twice. You can do that, right? Tell your friends. Tell your friends about the show. We really appreciate that. Let's see. No inspirational quote by a four-year-old today. Running out of time. Didn't have time to get it done. So we're leaving you here, okay? We're going to go out this week. Another song, another tune off of David Chen's new EP, Cello Put in Pop. This song is called Mr. Brightside by The Killers. And we'll be back next week with more The Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Have a great week.